Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal, our little travel segment. Well, it's going to take us up to St. Paul, Minnesota, where I've been a couple times this year and saw this pitcher, Mark Hamburger. Dan, you're a sports guy. He's pitching tonight, actually. He's on his way to a 9-1 start. It's just quite a story. First segment, he pitches for the St. Paul Saints. He's been with the Texas Rangers, tried out for the Cubs a couple years ago. But you'll hear about his journey, and we're going to hear a little about his path to self-understanding and self-reflection in this.
Mark Hamburger, pitch with the St. Paul Saints, and you're live at CHS Field from Mr. Veck's office. Mr. Mike Veck, the creator of this beautiful place.
So two in-the-moment things just for the radio segment here. Number one, what were you doing when I came in? You were with, that's Madonna, the mascot?
I was with Madonna, our mascot, and they just asked me to do a little filming. And when you film here, you don't just stand there. You dance, you goof around. So yeah, I don't actually know what I was doing, but they'll piece it together, all the video, and make something out of it.
Now, when I came up opening day, opening night, I know Mike. Mike's been on the radio show, and I wanted to see the whole Mary Tyler Moore thing. And I'd heard about you. That was the first time I'd seen you pitch. Did you pitch a complete game the first night? You came close. I know you won.
Yeah, I don't get to pitch the whole game.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But so I had my camper van out by center field, you know, and I said goodbye to everybody. It was another maybe half hour, 45 minutes after the game. I'm getting in my camper van, and I look through that center field wall, and there's like five people in the stands, and you're out there signing an autograph. That's an image I'll always take with me from coming up here on opening night. Mm-hmm. Watching you pitch was one thing, but just seeing you do that, and I've read some background and stuff, how you're real fan-friendly, but why is that so important to you? There were no cameras around, there was no media around, but there you were. It was like almost like a one-to-one thing. You were just signing autographs and hanging out with people. Mm-hmm. But it had to be half hour, 45 minutes after the game. Where does that come from?
Appreciation for what I do and an acknowledgement of the people that are there. I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, of what do I say my job title is? I'm an entertainer. So when it comes to, you know, I even question myself pitching sometimes because I get so into it that I get mad. But then I feel as though that's like my ego that's trying to show people that I can do something, when in all actuality, if I lose that game, the fans, they appreciate my vigor out there, my you know, how hard I'm trying, if I'm enjoying, you know, if I'm talking to their kid. So I guess I look on it as a deeper thing. That I'm really that last kid. If that last kid gets his signature signed, like most guys will sign five and see it, but if you're that last kid and someone waits all the way, I guess it's got to be a good feeling for him. I don't know how it feels, but
yeah. There's a lot of, I don't even know if we have time for the whole thing, there's a lot of pieces to your story. There really is. And I can see after reading about you and why you resonate with fans in so many different ways. I mean, so tell us a little bit. I mean, you're from here originally. Mm-hmm. Tell us about growing up here, what your folks did and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I was born in St. Paul. I like to say that my kind of sonic boom happened here. So the fact that I'm actually returning and playing here, I don't think it's really random, you know. I think that kind of where you come from calls to you, and where could I make the biggest difference in my career? I think being here is somewhere that I really love to be. But I my mom and dad, born in Shoreview, 15 minutes from here. I'm born in Shoreview. Lived in the same house since I was born. And
what'd they do? What'd they do for a living?
Dad has been a printer, graphic designer ever since I was little. Took over his dad's business. Him and his brother did, and my mom has been stay-at-home mom and interior designer since I was young as well, and she still is working full-time as an interior designer. And then I have two siblings as well, older brother, older sister, so I'm the youngest.
So you get into baseball. Did you play in high school? Tell us a little bit about college.
It started late. I actually give my baseball to my neighborhood. Because I was the youngest in my neighborhood, so every activity that I did, I was always the little one who had to beat out everybody else. And so I always kind of say my competitive level, because I was always facing older kids, is like always growing. I never see a ceiling, because I'm like, he could be 20 years older than me, but I'm still going to beat him, you know? So, but yeah, played high school baseball, didn't play junior year of high school, played senior year, got noticed by a twin scout. He was actually seeing another player pitching 93, and I was throwing 86, 87 at the end of the game. I had more strikeouts, less pitches, and so he came over to me and was like, "Hamburger, nice to meet you. Maybe we'll talk down the road." I think he asked me what my GPA was, and I told him, and he was like, "Maybe you should go to school." I was like, "You're right." But a couple of years later, he saw me after college at the open tryout for the Minnesota Twins down at the Metrodome. And in 2 years, my velocity went from 87 to 92, 93.
Yeah. So you played baseball. You get in the minor leagues. You went. I mean, you played for the Rangers.
Yep, Rangers.
Triple A a lot. I was going to ask you about some of your favorite stops. I know Clinton, Iowa. I was just there. And I know Bakersfield. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah. So you do that. Then the whole thing about the weed and stuff. Tell us about that twice. You got suspended?
Two positive drug tests for weed. Yep, that was 2012. After the season was over, I didn't have much care for if I did fail a drug test. It was almost like I had hardened up so much that I just kind of was living my life without even thinking of the consequences.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess can get you into trouble, but at the end of the day, I feel as though the best thing that ever happened to me, because it made me take a step away from my life and reorganize or spend time alone, self-reflect.
There was a quote, I mean, I pulled this out again, I read a lot of stuff about you, but this quote is just really, really powerful stuff. It goes, "I was trying to achieve baseball for so long that I wasn't achieving who I was, and you needed to get to know yourself."
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's really good stuff.
Self-reflection was like, it's huge for me. Just to being able to like detach from everything and like ask myself a question.
yeah, that's really. So you went to rehab for that, right?
Did. Yeah. I went to Hazelden. And actually, I chose to go. So I still had insurance through baseball, through Major League Baseball. So $40,000 treatment, I paid $200 deductible.
Wow.
So, which is crazy. And my insurance for Big League Baseball ended 2 days after I got out of treatment. So the thing was that was a big blessing. Do I think it was the treatment that helped me? Not necessarily. I don't think it was the doctors or anything like that. It was actually just my time with myself, because it was like I was being in my room at nighttime, like, why are you mad at this? Why are you mad at this? And I'd have to go through it. It wasn't anyone who had to necessarily ask me that question, but it was like myself going through my own life. Until finally I realized I couldn't hold on to the anger anymore. I couldn't hold on to the need of money, the need of being in the majors, all these things, you know, like why that person, I feel as though they wronged me. And it all just welled up until I like gave it to God. And I just said, I was like, dude, I don't know who I'm giving this to, but I'm done. And once I like let it go, my next 25 days, I just floated.
Wow.
It was like I felt as though I was like, I had gotten rid of that anger. I had gotten rid of the past. It's kind of like people are depressed and it's like they hold on to something. Well, if they can find out how to release that, well, then that's not hindering you anymore. So I like literally, it was like a physical purging where I like started crying and like that, those tears. Now I don't ever see tears as like, that person's just sad. I see them, dude, cry, get rid of that. Whatever that is, it's coming out. So get rid of it, you know? So at that moment, it was a...
Was it a moment thing or was it a process?
I mean, that was a legitimate moment. That was a time of where it came to the surface and I had to make a decision with what it was. And was that a process getting to there? Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. But I guess sometimes you come to a T in the road. And you have to, you know, choose where that goes.
So that stops what year?
That was 2012 that I had failed the drug test. So it's 2013 I came to St. Paul for my first time.
Then when does yoga start?
Yoga actually started 2009.
Oh, it started, okay.
Yeah, so that was
I was wondering if there was any trade. I mean, went into yoga as a way to meditate and get in the moment and stuff like
It definitely deepened my practice. My yoga deepened after the drug test, after becoming sober. But also just, I guess, wherever I was at in my life, yoga has just kind of been there for me as my workout besides going and lifting weights. So it is kind of like my church, but also it would always change. Some days it'd be, I'm going to get through this. Some days it'd be, I'm going to take this in a way I need to get rid of something. Some days it'd be, I'm just here enjoying my friend next to me, you know, so...
Is yoga part of your pitching routine? Like, what happens like on the day you pitch? Do you yoga before you pitch?
I'm pretty loose with like what happens the day of my start. I don't like to have any set things because if you have set things and one falls through, I've seen guys. I mean, baseball. You've probably heard of superstitious things.
Right.
Well, I try to avoid the superstitions.
I covered the 91-92 Bulls, and I've talked to a lot of baseball players, but that's one of the more fascinating athletes I've talked to, and that's Mark Hamburger. We'll be back with more from Mark from St. Paul after David Jennings and the news on WGN.
Hi, this is Tommy Rowe. You're listening to Dave Hoekstra, Nocturnal Journal, WGN, 720 AM.
Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720, and we're doing our interview with Mark Hamburger, the pitcher for the St. Paul Saints. In this segment, he talks about his aspirations, or lack thereof, of getting back to the major leagues. He just made the All-Star team. I talked to his manager on Friday, and there'll be a lot of scouts at the All-Star game in a couple of weeks, so I would expect him to, at least if he wanted to, get out of St. Paul and go to a higher level of baseball. But he'll talk about that here in this segment.
There's a lot of reasons I can see why you're so popular here. I mean, you're a local guy. You've had these struggles in the public. You've come back from that. How does that play? I guess the way I want to ask the question is, how does that play with major leagues? Now, I've read this. You can tell me, is that important for you to get back to the major leagues? And does your background hinder that at all? Did you have a tryout with the Cubs like 2 years ago or a year ago?
Tried with the Cubs 2 years ago, had tried with the Texas Rangers this offseason.
Actually, how do they look at you that way, and after all the changes you've been, how do you feel about your aspirations to make it to the majors? I guess it's a two-way question.
It's super. I mean, I guess there's just so much that goes into it, because I, you know what, I love to play at the highest level. I would. Would I like to play at those stadiums and even be able to settle life for myself money-wise? I would. But now that I've come across personal happiness, it's like the need for external happiness doesn't matter as much as just my inner motives. So I would love to go to the majors. I would love to go back to pro baseball or, you know, Major League Baseball. But if it didn't feel right with where I was at in my life at that moment, I would say no. So it would be like that aha moment of, wow, this really feels good, then I'm going to do it. You know, so if it didn't feel good and it just felt as though staying home or staying here would be better, well, I would go with my gut. I would not just go with a paycheck.
I read somewhere that somebody wanted you to be a reliever, but you wanted to stay here because you like starting so much.
I want to show them that I can be a starter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've heard that I can't get out lefties. You know, and I guess I've gotten out a lot of lefties. You know, the fact that I've gotten out of a lot of games and I'm pretty successful means I have to at least get out more lefties than I don't.
Yeah.
So I disagree with a lot of things that, just, you know, people will say, like, oh, we see you as a reliever. Well, you've never actually given me the opportunity to start with a big league baseball. Starting with a big league baseball versus a triple A baseball is completely different. The movement of a AAA baseball versus a big league baseball or versus our baseball is tremendous. If given the opportunity, could I be successful? Maybe. But I guess I'll never know unless the right person sees me.
You're a big Satchel Paige fan?
Oh, he's my favorite.
Now, why Satchel Paige? And is it true? Again, this stuff, you bring his card on days you pitch?
Well, I have his card. I actually took it out of my wallet, which is good because it's an original.
Oh, really?
My really good friend got it for me, and it's one of his original cards, but he is everything that I want to be, except he left contracts all the time. Yeah. So, like, that's back then, I can imagine, you know. I guess he was concerned with money, so that was a big thing for him, which is cool. Someone calls at 2 in the morning, come play for us. But I think it shows that he was one of the best pitchers of all time. If you can have the Yankees call him up and say, hey, come tell us if Joe DiMaggio is the real deal. Why would they call Satchel Paige to go pitch to Joe DiMaggio if he wasn't the best pitcher of all time?
Yeah.
That just shows you he's the best pitcher of all time, but he won't be recognized as it. You know, stat-wise, it's skeptics because they don't have all the things. But just his quotes, his lifestyle, the fact that he pitched 2-3 games a week. There was no pitch count.
Are you kidding me?
Like, there was no pitch count back then. You pitched until your body broke.
Yeah. You're not a fan of pitch counts.
I'm not.
Yeah. What's the most?
I'm not a fan of limiting people. Yeah. Limiting yourself is the worst thing you can do.
Yeah.
Because your body's going to listen to it.
Yeah. So spiritually, and culture-wise, you really found a great place here. I mean, we're sitting here in Vec's office. Mm-hmm. Fun is good. I know you like. You just talked about how you like baseball should be fun and silly and stuff. So this really, the climate here, and the Saints are known for this, but I mean, the climate here is just so much fun and free. Free, I guess, is the word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I mean, that's why I keep coming back. Is I feel as though it's the. The real reason of baseball.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, for me personally, I can't say that, truth for other people, but I guess I love the movie Battered Bastards of Baseball, if you've seen
it. I haven't seen that
one. It's on Netflix, and it's about Bing Russell, how he saved independent baseball. And you'd actually love it, but he bought the old Portland Mavericks.
And
they just talk about the whole time about how he loved baseball and he wanted to create something beautiful, and he created something more beautiful than anyone imagined. And it was by doing the right thing with baseball, of just not necessarily coaching people, letting them play, because they'll play good enough if they're free. You know, it's kind of like you just said, the freer you are, the freer you can be to perform naturally.
And that's the thing. I mean, the history, I'm a huge baseball fan, but, sometimes the major leagues can be a little too corporate and confining for my taste. I tell people when I come back from games here, I mean, people are smiling the whole game. There's such a great positive vibe in the stands here. It's really, truly is fun.
Personable.
Yeah.
I mean, I asked our GM, Derek, and I asked him, I was like, so during the fifth inning sometime when I pitch, can I just run into the stand and grab a kid's cheeseburger and take a bite of it and then give him my hat? And he was like, yeah, I think you can do that. I was like, yeah. So it's like, it's the more I'm here, the freer I become. Uh-huh. And I feel better being free than being rich. So.
Yeah. Well, a couple more questions. I'm keeping an eye on the clock out there. Is your agent still Billy Martin Jr.?
As of now, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he coaches in the American Association.
Oh, does he really?
Grand Prairie, so he cannot represent someone.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The American Association.
Really?
Yeah.
But he was your agent.
He was.
What was that like? Did you ever talk about his dad? That's the same Billy Martin.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard a lot of good stories about Mr. Billy Martin. So, and his son is no different. He's a character himself, but a really, really great guy.
A couple of things on pitching. I think I got off the track. So, what do you know? How many pitches you've thrown this year? As far as a high, 140, 140. Did I see 140 for one game?
I think 130 something.
130 something,
something like that. Pretty light load.
So what is a submarine splatoon?
Submarine splatoon is a splitty from down there.
Okay.
But, yeah.
That's a new pitch?
The splatoon. I wouldn't say it's new. Okay. It's been pulled out here and there, but it's definitely, it's a different one.
And the other one, the slurvy slurve. What's that?
The slurvy slurve. Well, you got the ethos.
Yeah, I know the ethos.
That's kind of like my slurvy slurve is, I'll try to make my body look as it's going as hard as it can, and then at the last second, slow down and release it and try to throw about a 55 mile an hour.
Really? Really?
I struck out actually one of my really good friends the other day, Reggie Abercrombie.
I know that name. Yeah.
I struck him out on a 64 mile an hour slurvy slurve, and he looked at me and he wanted to kill me. And I started smiling because he's my friend, you know. But I didn't think it actually worked, and it did.
Two more things. What's life like? I want to ask you some minor league town questions. What's life on the road like in this league and stuff? You go on the bus, and again, this is stuff. Do you check out restaurants, record stores?
My kind of normal schedule is I always bring my longboard with me wherever I go. Yeah. And I'll usually set off in the morning, go to a park, have my breakfast, set up my hammock maybe. And then
on the road.
Yeah, yeah. And I usually, right when I get into town, I'll find like their local co-op or like a good grocery store, load up on, take my meal money and usually get all the food necessary for those 3 days that I'm there. And sometimes when I was practicing more yoga, I'd find a yoga studio in every city. I've kind of taken just a little break for a while. But just I always cruise around town if there's local shops and little flea markets and stuff like that. Even Goodwills and Salvation Armies, you can find gold in some of those small cities we go to. So
this is a good town for that. Before I saw you, I was over at Succotash. I mean, over there.
Thrifting around here is big time.
Yeah. So what do your teammates say? Do you have any compatriots who are into that, or do you go off on your own? I remember talking to Phil Jackson about this at the Bulls. Sometimes Phil would go to museums and go see a movie, and then nobody would ever, people just wanted to stay in the hotel room and stuff. Yeah, do you go off on your own?
You know, I am pretty solo.
Yeah.
I think after 10 years of doing it, you fall into either of those groups. Like, you usually have a roommate, or you're kind of a little more solo. So I like my personal space. I like going out with the guys and stuff like that. But during the morning, I spend 10 hours a day with people.
Yeah.
So the first 10 hours, when I wake, or the first couple of hours, I always like to kind of be on my own.
What about Clinton? Any memories of Clinton, Iowa? I love that little. But when people in Chicago, I always send them to that stadium.
Yeah, we really just talk about the corn and the ethanol smell.
Right.
Because I used to have something like that in high school around here, where there was a glue factory, and when the smell blew over the football field while we had practice, you'd see five guys go. So, but no, I Clinton. Not too many memories of Clinton, but I because I was only there for like 2 weeks. But yeah. Bakersfield,
another one. They just lost that team. That team went through a lot. I saw a couple games at Bakersfield years ago.
We had a game canceled because the parking lot, which was dirt, a huge dust storm blew the entire parking lot onto the field. So we couldn't. By the time the dirt moved in, we couldn't see our left fielder, and he just ran through the dirt like he was scared. So, and then Bakersfield. But I did play the two best frisbee golf courses of my life in Bakersfield.
Oh, really? Really?
Just outside of Bakersfield, and so even though you hear about Oildale and stuff like that not being the, I had a very enjoyable time there, and I saved a dog.
Oh, did you?
That was the biggest moment in my minor league career.
What happened?
In my baseball career, behind our batter's bullpen, or our batter's batting cage, one of the guys ran out and goes, "Guys, there's a dog over here." Went over. It was an American, or it was a Mastiff / Boxer. They said he was under a year old, 80 pounds and malnourished. He was 80 pounds already, yet he was under a year old. Broken femur. Oh, and I put the water to him, and he didn't move at all, and he just looked at me until finally, after about 10 minutes, he lifted up his head, started getting water. I realized I could pet him. I picked him up, brought him to my place, and the next 6 days we were at home, I brought him in front of the fans and just said, hey guys, this is our dog. We found him. They're going to kill him if we don't, like, can't save his leg. So the fans raised $750, and then an anonymous donor called in because they put it on the news and said that they would pay for whatever we didn't cover. So we got him femur surgery.
Wow.
And then found him a permanent family.
Wow.
And he was the most beautiful dog I've ever seen. I wish I could have taken him, but wow, during that season I couldn't.
When was that?
That was 2010.
And who was the affiliate then in Bakersfield?
Texas Rangers.
Texas Rangers.
Yeah. But that was the best moment I've ever had, man. He was he never made a noise. And the fact that he was 80 pounds and malnourished, he must be like 160 pounds right now. So,
do you have a name?
Because Bakersfield Blaze, we named him Blaze.
Yeah, so, right. Good for you. Yeah. Good for you. Yeah. How about minor league characters, teammates, stories you can say on the radio?
Well, we got my buddy Jose Martinez. I basically still say what he says every day. His laugh, and then I'd be like, hey, how you doing, Jose? He'd be like, outstanding looking. I'd be like, outstanding looking. I had one guy from Venezuela. His name was Pavano. No, not Pavano, sorry. Was it Pavano? But my last name wasn't Hamburger. It was Jimburgus. So I don't know how he came up with Jimburgus. Josh Hamilton, you know?
Oh, yeah, right.
Actually, I played in Fenway my second outing, and I ran past him in the outfield, and he spit and accidentally hit me in the leg. So I looked around, and he wiped it off and was like, my bad. And I looked around, and I was like, I'm in Fenway, and Josh Hamilton just spit on me. This is the best day of my life. So that was a pretty memorable one.
Who's your manager then in Texas?
It was Ron Washington.
Oh, Ron Washington.
Yeah,
Texas.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, he was so cool. When I'd gotten pulled over at like a ticket or something like that, and had been late for the next day, and I went in and talked to Ron, and I thought it was pretty bad because it was actually right at the end of spring training, you know, and I just had this fit, and he was like, hey man, don't worry about it. We'll stand up. We'll take care of this together like men. And you don't have to worry about it, you know, because that's what's cool about us being a team is that we got your back. So, like, even behind closed doors, he just was the... And he never picked anybody apart. He only picked them up. When you got a team that... A coach that doesn't pick you apart, I mean, the positivity goes a long way.
Yeah, you're
so,
right.
And he... 2 years in a row, they were in the World Series. So.
That's true. That's something I've learned with him, with his books. There's a lot to be said about, you know, being positive. And now, I think this isn't any of your ink, this last question, but there's another quote. You said, picture a diamond a foot long inside each one of us.
Mm-hmm.
Every day you have something to polish, everything to make them shine and stuff. Mm-hmm. Elaborate on that, what you're talking about there.
Well, actually, that's the tattoo I have right here.
Yeah, that's what, okay.
So I have this little single green one. So picture a diamond a foot long inside each and every one of us. The diamond has 1,000 facets. Each facet is covered with dirt and tar. It's the job of the soul to clean each one until they shine brilliantly, reflecting the colors of a rainbow. And I think of that as like this is my life goal. Not to achieve money, car, house, retirement, 401k, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
But it's to be so that no matter, like, I will stay the same no matter what I'm given or no matter what I lose, you know? So it's, you know, my life can crumble in the matter of a minute. So I guess when I look at my life, every day I wake up and I just have something I can work on. So at the end of the day, I, like, kind of polished a little bit more of my ability to deal with you. You know, I can't be good to people if I don't even know what's going on with myself. So I guess every day I'm like trying to work out my interior so that no matter what happens in my exterior, I mean, we don't know what can happen. Your day, like mm-hmm. I just said, in 1 second, something can happen and your whole life has changed. So what if that occurs? Are you able to deal with it? So I guess the only way that I know that I can deal with it is by working on myself.
We'll be back with more of Mark Hamburger's Stories from the Road after this on WGN. It was like a picture, she was laying there, moonlight dancing off her hair. She woke up and took me by the hand. She's gonna love me in my Chevy van, and that's all right with me. So we're going to wrap up our segment with Mark Hamburger of the St. Paul Saints. You know, one of the reasons I went up there was to talk to him about the camper van book I'm doing. He's got one van in Australia, and he's refurbishing one up in the Twin Cities. But, of course, it turned out to be a bigger story than that. But here Mark's going to talk about what he's doing with van life.
So you have a Ford Transit. Let's start there. You have a Ford Transit in Australia?
I do, yeah. Solar panels, 160-liter water tank. Outdoor shower, stovetop, no fridge.
I got a fridge. I don't have a bathroom.
Yeah, the fridge pulled too much.
Really?
From the solar. So, yeah, it was I think it was like the lighter plug-in, you know. And I'm fine doing, they have some pretty nice coolers out there these days that stay pretty cold for a couple of days, so.
And so how big is it? Give me the dimensions. Mine's 9.5 feet tall, maybe 27 feet wide.
27 feet.
Yeah.
Oh, yours is real long.
Yeah,
Man, I'd have to say mine's just like a maybe 17 footer.
Yeah,
nothing. Nothing big. And I actually even kind of sleep diagonal.
Yeah, I read that. Though. Yeah.
But I
You're 6 foot. You're 6'4".
6'4". Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I mean, there's so many other ways to sleep too. So I have a hammock. I have a tent. You know, and I think once I do get back there, I probably will reconstruct it a little bit. I actually wanted to get a tent that goes off the back. So that when you open those double doors, I can have a tent so I can have my own little foyer, you know? So like, especially when it rains, you can still have the door open and not have to worry about mosquitoes and stuff like that. So
now what was that the first, I did read a lot of stories. Sean sent me a lot of background stories. You also were restoring one with your brother in 1960.
Still am doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me which came first.
This one came, the one in the States came first. I bought it back in 2014 in the Catskill Mountains, which is a story in itself. Just going and getting it, it was like the most amazing time. Being in those small towns of the Catskills in upstate New York, it's amazing. So, but yeah, I got it that in 2013, that is, or 2014, that's a 13-foot 1967 fan trailer from Wakarusa, Indiana.
Okay.
And so it's the old tin can style.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to polish it, though. I like the rustic outside, but we will be doing a lot of mods on the outside, like roof rack, you know, canopies, and we're doing all custom canopies, trying to take the bumper and do something neat with that, so it kind of gives a little flair to it. But yeah.
When did you start that?
Started that. Been about 2 years now that he started working on it, and then last year he got married, so it's been a very, very busy year. He hasn't really been able to work on it, but now his schedule has opened up, so I would like to say estimated or guesstimated done by September. So,
and then the one in Australia, mm-hmm. is that there? Did you rent it? Did you buy it? What's the
This is like the biggest blessing in the world is that I don't have my own home. You know, so this trailer here was going to be my own home. And of course, if I have a trailer here, what would I like to do over there? You know, I have a trailer. So one of the head sponsors, the main sponsors for the Melbourne Aces, he asked me if I was coming back next year. And I said, I would love to. I love this place. I was making $200 a weekend. And he said, well, you know, we know you're only making $200 a weekend, and we'd like to help you out there. And I was like, well, that doesn't matter to me because I just love this place so much. And he's like, we can tell, and we loved having you here. And we know you're building a trailer back home. So have you thought of anything that you like here? And I was like, oh, actually, I found this cool van the other day. Check it out. A couple days later, he calls me up and goes, Mark, what are you doing on Monday? I'm like, it's my birthday. He's like, want to go to Sydney? I was like, for what? He's like, well, you know that trailer you sent me the picture of? Well, I talked to the guy who owns it, and I'd like to buy it for you. And I was like, what? I was like, I can't have you buy that for me. It's mean, first off, it was a good amount of money, but then I didn't want to owe him anything, and I didn't want to put logos on it. You know,
yeah, like right, yeah.
Aces logos. This yeah. is something that wants to be my home, not some kind of team project. So,
yeah.
But he just said, man, you know, I like using the money that I have to give people beautiful lives and doing what they want to do. And I mean, I was so humbled, man, because on my birthday of turning 30,
right.
I don't have a home. And this guy on my 30th birthday purchases me my first home. And my last 3 weeks spent in Australia was bliss. I was waking up next to the beach, had my stove, cooking eggs, fruit, all that, going to the ballpark and playing baseball. So
what beach was it?
Many different ones. Yeah, yeah. I was just outside of Melbourne, so
okay.
Anywhere from Mornington Peninsula to Bell's Beach to all different ones.
Wow, yeah. Wow. Well, so I've traveled a little bit, but I've never been to Australia. What hooked you about Australia? What did you like about it? Just the culture and the climate.
Well, you know, I've been in South American baseball mm-hmm. for the past...
Were you in Venezuela?
4 years, yeah. I went to Venezuela.
When were you there?
I've been there two times, and the last time I was there was 2016. So, yeah. I mean, I was there actually right when I left. They grounded planes. Yeah. The Bolibre went out, so, you know, you couldn't even spend the Bolibre anymore. So, I was down there during a very... Like, when it was escalating a lot. Which was interesting to see, but also it was like how thankful I am to live here. It changed my whole perspective of everything in my life here when I saw some of the people, the way they were living there. But so being in Mexico, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, all these places, I loved it. The baseball was great. The money was great, but I couldn't connect with people. I'm fluent, but I'm not. You can't get to the depth of someone if you're not, you know, it's like you have to be engulfed in the culture for years to be able to really learn someone's heart, I guess, in another language. So I just thought Australia, it's the only other place really that has winter baseball. So I just thought, I had this feeling a couple years ago that it might be my home, my second home. And for whatever reason, that popped in my head. And then when I went there, this all occurred. They bought me that trailer and I was like, apparently this was my second home.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So that trailer's there. Right.
That was the transit. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What color is it?
White.
Is it?
Yeah, it has a purple canopy. Super, super simple. It's great. And those solar panels are just amazing. Mm-hmm. Being able to live without having to plug in or anything. I mean, for 3 weeks I didn't have rent.
That's Mark Hamburger. For more on Mark and his journey, we never plugged the Nocturnal Journal Facebook page, but you should check that out for how his journey is progressing.